Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. I've got a great show lined up for you today. I'm really excited to talk with our guest today, and I think you guys are going to get a lot out of this. And, of course, I'll let Rob do the introduction. But, Rob, good morning. How are you?
Doing terrific, Todd. It's great. We're definitely in the winter fall mode here. You know, between Rocky and I, we're in the cold temperatures here that's sweeping across the U.S. So we have to do our weekly weather report, but things are okay.
It's 80. Right. It's 80 and beautiful here in Honolulu. And
you have it so rough, Todd.
Yes, I do. Why don't you go ahead and introduce Rocky? Then I have something to share before we get in too deep. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, Todd, why don't you do that first, and then I'll introduce Rocky.
Okay. So Thursday, I get this email, and it's one of those emails that, well, I have to be careful because I'm going to give it away. So I get this email Thursday, and it was one of those little slightly irritating emails. I responded to it, and I responded back, and it turned out to be actually productive. And I'm like, this is weird. And then they're like, let's do a call. And I'm like, okay, let's do a call. And the person said, I'm going to bring on, you know, a president of such and such. I'm like, oh, and this was a well-known group. And I'm like, we went from someone to someone. And so I, you know, get on the phone with this individual. And I'm being very careful here because in the meantime, between all those emails and the discussion, I had the most incredible idea come over me that made me think of a new way to monetize podcasts. Now, the sad part is I can't tell you guys because it's still top secret. I'm such a tease, but it's so good. The guy that I was talking to at the specific company, when I talked to him, he says, dude, my brain just flipped. So when I got this president of this major company's brain to flip, and then we had a great call, and I have to work up this huge proposal, and it's a whole new process. But when I called Angelo and said, hey, I got something. He's like, what? And I told him, he said, oh man, holy shit. He said, that's an idea. And I'm like, oh yeah. And he says, you're going to have NDAs on that one. So I'm going to be reaching out to some podcasters. But if we're able to pull it off, if we're able to pull it off, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of things they have to work through. I'm be very excited to share it on a future new media show, but I'm such a tease.
Yes, you are. But that's okay. It's okay. I'm just glad that those ideas are coming, right?
Yeah. And it didn't happen in the shower. That's the weird thing, you know? It's usually in the shower, you're half scrubbed. You're like, honey, get the pencil, you know?
Yeah. Awesome.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm going to hint if it's a distribution play, a test play.
Can't say. Because give any hint, it'd be like, you guys would be like, da-da.
Yeah, I'm not even going to ask because I know exactly what Todd's going to say. Sorry, you can't say anything. So that's all right. Well, let's let everybody know who's on the other box.
Yeah.
You know, above me here, and her name is Rocky Thomas, and she is the VP of a company called AdsWiz, and they've been a longtime player in kind of the monetization of streaming radio, and they have a platform that does some ad injection of ads into podcast type content now. So I wanted to have her on the show because she's kind of, you know, she's been a leading light in the digital world. You know, she's kind of a digital media warrior of sorts, I think is what she likes to call herself. And she's very knowledgeable about audio. And she's also involved on a new kind of group that's part of the IEB around podcast standardizations and metrics. So we wanted to have her on the show to kind of shed some light on that and to talk about the cool technology that her company has for helping podcasts monetize. So Rocky, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm very excited to be here. It's a long time coming, so I'm glad to be here.
Well, Rob, I did want to mention that Daniel in the chat room says, yes, Daniel, it's for podcasters to make money. So just
You thought it would be for you to make money. That's it.
That's right. It's where the podcasters make money. So, Rocky, you and I have, I think about maybe a week or maybe a week and a half ago, got a chance to chit chat and what's going on at AdWiz and some other stuff. But I think a lot of the folks that are listening to the show are probably like, AdWiz who? So why don't you give everyone the, you know, the 411 on AdWiz and the, you know, the genesis of the company and what you guys are doing in the space?
Yeah, absolutely. So AdWiz specializes in audio ad technology. We have a couple different types of solutions. I would say that our core is actual ad injection, not only for linear streamers, as we call them, but also for on-demand and for podcasters. In conjunction with that, we also have an ad management and trafficking system that allows publishers to not only traffic their pre-roll, mid-roll, and post-roll advertising, but also their video, their banners. It's a total comprehensive ad trafficking system that allows people to really manage all of their campaigns in one nice interface and also allow reconciliation of those campaigns in one interface. We are trying to eliminate the swivel chair that happens between different types of ad management systems. We also have an analytic product called Audiometrics. That is, I like to say it's more like Google Analytics than it is Comscore. We help publishers really dive down nice and deep about who's consuming their content, where they're consuming, and what type of devices, where countries. And until recently, we were the white label solution for Arbitron. Once Nielsen merged, they decided to go a different direction with their SDK product, so we're no longer working with them, but it was a great experience while we were. Then we also work in with AdWave, which is our global audio ad exchange that allows publishers to monetize not only in the United States, but also in 16 other countries where they might not have direct sales force. So that means if it's a United States publisher, but a German listener is listening, we inject a German ad, so it makes it more relevant for the end listener, and then share that revenue back with the publisher. And so really, I like to say that we're the plumbing of audio advertising. We provide a nice conduit between the demand and supply side to really make business happen.
Ooh, that's definitely the 3-minute 411. So you guys got your hands really in everything here. You do video, you do audio.
When we started in 2008 as a video ad serving company, and then in 2012, we pivoted to, by and large, mostly audio. There's a couple of clients in France that still use our video solution. It's by far a great video ad serving platform as well, but really the need, the green fields that we see is in audio. There's just not a whole lot of players in this space, and video has a lot of different players, but we still have all the integration. We're VAS, you know, VPay compliant. We're just not going to have what I would call the IAB rising stars, like the latest, but for what we do provide for video, it serves all the needs of audio publishers.
Yeah, and I understand that we're having the audio on the stream. Rocky's on a external mic today, so we've done what we can to have the audio as clean as possible. So apologize.
Sorry, buddy, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. So go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I was just gonna say the real nut of what their platform does is it's starting to converge what was been priorly known is ad injection into live radio streams. And I think what's happening here, and Rocky's company is kind of at the forefront, is trying to converge what's been common practice in the radio industry for many, many, many years and kind of bring it to podcasting. And I think that the big question is it appropriate for that technology to be in podcasting? And I think it's also the question is there some advantage that podcasters aren't taking advantage of by using this kind of technology? So, Rocky, I mean, is there any way you can jump in on those questions?
Yeah, sure. So we went out first with obviously the linear product. And I'll be honest, that's really the hardest part of the product. We first started with German publishers who had us on a 200 millisecond latency for insertion. And linear is very hard, as you guys know, because it's actually ad replacement, not ad insertion. And there is a difference between it. ad replacement means that you're essentially putting an ad on top of something that's already underlying, and you have a hard spot set. So it might be 5 minutes, and you need to, it's like a train running, and you're trying to insert ads as you're running on this train. So it's definitely a lot harder to make sure that the latency, it sounds good. So you're not having what I would call the old issues with ad insertion, where you would hear underlying ads and it was phasing and it didn't sound good. So we started out with that product, and then we moved into podcasting. And I would say what we do that's quite different than what's out in the market is that we can insert ads in a lot of different ways. We can do metadata triggers, which by and far I think is the best way to do it. But we can also detect, like say a jingle that happens consistently, that might be the in and out of a stop rate. We can also do silence detection as well as megahertz detection. And what's really different with our podcasting solution is that we're able to dynamically insert ads on the fly for not only what I would call progressive streamed on-demand type of listening, but also for downloaded and time-shifted content. So when a user engages with us with a podcast stream URL, we're able to gather the user agent information. And based on where the publisher puts the metadata trigger, we're able to insert ads, either direct sales ads that they might be managing, or also ads via the AdWave Exchange if they need help monetizing on the national level. And so what I think is really cool, though, this is why I get so excited about what we're doing in podcasting, is that if there is no ads available, and when the metadata trigger is actually served, and you say I want a 2 minute stop break, but there's only one ad that's really available for that user agent, we just play one ad and then it rolls back into the content. So there's really no need to have that kind of promo or replacement underlying content that we need to stripe over. It really makes a great user experience for the listener, and it's a really effective way of doing ad insertion.
So oftentimes what we, what we find is that on the host endorsed advertising, the podcasters have quite the leniency to go 60, 90, 120 seconds, whatever it may be. So does it matter for you on how long that clip is? You just jam it in, or do you have to tell the content creator you got to be at 2 minutes, and if you're outside of 2 minutes, there's going to be an issue? Or
no, not at all. So really what the publisher would do is really state the parameters of the ad break. So if they wanted to have a 5 minute ad break, that's fine. And if say the personal endorsement content was only 90 seconds and that's all they had and available in that spot break, even though the parameter would be 5 minutes, still we would play a 90-second, and then we would continue back on with the content of the podcast. So it's up to the publisher how long they want to make the spot break. So that means that if they had a personal endorsement advertising that lasted, say, 2 minutes, and they made the podcast spot break 3 minutes, we could then come in and help out with monetization with AdWave on those other 1 minute. If the publisher chooses. I mean, it's all about choice with the publisher. That's something that's is a guiding principle for us over at AdsWiz, is that we want to, create tools that create flexibilities depending on what the publisher really needs. And I think personal endorsement is something that's really interesting because it's now become considered native advertising, which I always chuckle because we've been doing, native advertising for a long time, even in traditional radio. And I think personal endorsement has a great ability to convert ROI for advertisers. And what I like to look at in 2015 is there a way to dynamically target the personal endorsement advertising? Are we going to see an increase of ROI if we do a call out to a market like, hey, Chicago, hey, Denver, or is there a way that we can segment out the personal endorsement to really increase ROI based on demographic data as well with first party data? So these are all, things that I think about of how we can make advertising more effective. I mean, my mission in this industry for the past, 16 years, which I have to swallow hard to say that, is how do we make advertising an additive element in people's lives? And I think the key is really dynamic, target, and relevant advertising. Until approximately about 4 years ago, though, we didn't have the scale. You can target yourself out of a buy, essentially. So you need to have that scale to really start breaking out advertising segments. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, what I would love to see the industry is have a universal radio ID of sorts where people can put their preferences in and say, listen, these are the type of categories that I'm interested in. And I'm not really so interested in these other categories. And then let's really try to make advertising, you know, additive and as attractive in people's lives where they want to reach and abandon the stream because they're irritated with it. That's what I want to eliminate.
Yeah, so Todd, as you think about kind of the more organic host read ads, which are very common in the podcasting space, you know, and I think, you know, most podcasters would listen to this and say, well, I don't really need to have dynamic insertion. All I just turn the mic on and I just read my spot, right? And that's how, and it's baked into the content. Well, the question gets back to, you know, there are potential advertising opportunities that are coming to the podcasting space that just straight host read reads into content is not going to be enough, right? And I think the whole dynamic insertion part of it kind of expands the capability of monetization for podcasts. But I agree with Rocky that the whole concept of how those ads are created and what's the format of those ads and what's the transitions that exist in those ads. You know, the AdsWiz kind of dynamic insertion technology basically enables you to do any of that and do it really well. And there are other companies that are doing like what is going on with AdsWiz. But I think, you know, Rocky, can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, you've been in the space a really long time and you know, have seen what's happening in broadcast radio, but where do you see it moving to with podcasting? You know, podcasts are a very personal medium. Is there any kind of difference in how advertisers need to look at podcasting with dynamic insertion?
Yeah, I mean, there are some inherent challenges that we're starting to run into, and this has been, you know, discussions that we've had on the podcasting IAB committee. And one of them is the ability for third-party audio ad tracking. And right now we have the ability to track a audio ad and pass that information that the impression or the audio ad was actually served to a user in real time. And that's by and large how linear audio advertising works. We also have the ability to do that in podcasting. Now, if it's a streamed type of on-demand content, then essentially acts the same as our linear AIS solution. So it's real-time insertion, and it's done as soon as the listener hears the ad trigger and the ad tag is sent back to the DFA account over at the agency. What becomes a little bit challenging with download is that right now the standard has been once a podcast is fully downloaded, then we send out the third-party audio ad tags. Ad tracker. So what's interesting is that it's not really real time. It's we could tell you that the listener downloaded the podcast, but we have at this time not an ability to detect if the listener actually consumed the impression. By and far, I think most demand partners understand that that's part of the space of podcasting. But as we've been talking to demand partners, they just want to know that it's going to be in what they call a time-shifted or a TiVo mentality. And it's not that we're getting less buys or more buys. They just want to have that ability and that awareness to know that that is happening. I see in the future that this is going to be, it's going to become a little bit more of an issue just because you're kind of mixing the meat when it comes to, you know, reporting. And that's something that we're discussing at the IAB because really with podcasting, the 800-pound gorilla, as we like to say, is Apple, and Apple, by and large, is not a fan of sharing that type of data. So it comes into a little bit of a challenge of how can we take, you know, and do we need this real-time tracking, or at the end of the day, is ROI and actually showing results for advertisers enough for the demand side? And that's really the conversations that we've been having a lot in the IB committees right now.
Yeah, I think that the big piece that's missing is, you know, once that listener has downloaded that episode, sure, we know that it was downloaded, but there's no connection with that audio file about whether it was ever played. And I think that's the missing piece that kind of glues this whole thing together. And you're exactly right. Apple doesn't appear to be willing to to share that kind of data. But I think the IEB, it's probably a wise thing potentially to have that as kind of a section in there that clients in the future kind of have some sort of reporting capability to actual plays on downloads. Because, I mean, the honest truth is that still today, two-thirds of podcast consumption is off of a download. Streaming is growing somewhat. I don't know that it's growing tremendously fast. It's a third of the consumption model today. Todd, I mean, jump in on that. Am I off base on that?
No, not at all. And actually, it's even a bigger issue because Apple controls like 87% of the market. And, the Android community's there, and we get a little more data off the Android folks. But, once it goes into the download, it's in there. But I think, we've had to mitigate these issues for 10 years. This is nothing new. And, really, ultimately, what we end up, we've tried several methods, which have both been effective, but sometimes a little bit time consuming. We've done post-campaign interviews. We've done survey. What we do is in our surveys of audiences, we specifically ask them, how long do you listen to a show? This specific podcaster, do you stay for 70% of the show? Do you stay all the way through? And because we have the metrics already on what the show's delivering, when we get a good 10% sampling on an audience on what their listening habits are for a specific show, you can pretty much tell, what that result is going to be and how long it takes before they actually listen to the content. One of our clients that we have that we're running through our metric system, we actually now from the online, I don't like to use the word stream because people think it's a live stream. It's an on-demand stream. So let's just make that very clear because someone says stream, they think they listen to Pandora, the podcast, that media file is being still served from a CDN somewhere. So what we've done with them is for those one-third of those clients are using an app or a web page or whatever it may be that they're clicking play on without having to pre-download when they're actually going to be actively listened. Because of the way the media is served out, it's bite chunked and it doesn't serve it all at once. It feeds a little bit at a time and stays a little bit ahead of the live stream or on demand stream.
Playback.
Yeah, right, playback. We can tell if they shuffle, if they stop, if they come back later. We can put that all together and we've been able to tell the client, hey, this is, here's the curve for your audience and, be able to give them the curve of, how long do they come in? Did they stay to 20 minutes? And basically know where that ad spot is. So we've been able to deduce at least from that metric and they've been able to make programming changes to their programs when they see drop-offs, unusual drop-offs. So we've been able to say, okay, now does that translate to the same type of a listening habit to an offline user? And what we've been following then up with is additional questionnaires and type stuff to ask the offline user what's your listening habit. And what we find is that curve is pretty doggone close. In the end, what's going to end up being the driving factor is the ROI. If the reporting, and this is the critical part, if the actual reporting is correct, and the advertiser gets billed for what was delivered and not a penny more, not a impression more, if the ROI is there, the advertiser's going to be happy and he's going to renew. I know that these guys want these more exotic metrics, but let's be honest.
Yeah.
We're being held to a higher standard than radio. We're being held to a higher standard than TV. We're almost being held to a higher standard than digital banner ads. I hate to say it, it's gotten that bad. But you've got this audience matchup that can't be done really anywhere else in space. So I think the smart, educated media buyers are not going to have an issue with the offline or the people that have downloaded and listened later. They know there's going to be a percentage that's not going to listen.
Yeah.
But, as long as the ROI falls within the window, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, when I used to sell radio back in the day, I used to train people. I said, listen, at the end of the day, the car dealer, if he wants to move five cars and you sell, whether you serve five or 500 ads, he just wants to make sure he moves those five cars. So how do we make those, you know, those metrics and those KPIs for those advertisers attainable on what we're doing in digital audio? And it's tough because, I mean, if you think about it, over-the-air radio is, there's nothing that's tracked. And they definitely have a lion's share of the business still to this day. And I think I would say the thing that kind of makes me, what I wish would be happening more, because it's something that could be done without a whole lot of extra technology. And that's why I think personal endorsement works so well and direct response on digital audio, especially for podcasts, is that we need good creative. I mean, the creative, a lot of the brand advertising that we're getting is what they're using on over the air, you know, whether it's network or national buys. And I'm definitely grateful for the buys, but I think there's a lot of creative ability that's being left on the table and call to actions that I think could be really beneficial and be able to provide an attribution metric that is beyond just the click and a conversion into a sales funnel. And I think that's where I get a little sad, because there's not a whole lot of brands that actually speak to the online listener, and there's just so much opportunity there. I mean, we could say the same for over-the-air broadcasting. I mean, it just bothers me that people spend millions upon millions of dollars on a campaign nationally, and they only, you know, carve out maybe $5,000 for the creative.
You know,
so I think it's an issue not just with us. I think it's with, you know, over-the-air as well. So
the direct response stuff at some point, you know, the direct response always leads, you know, in any space. And what we're really wanting, and I think, you know, the wish in the back of my mind is that the brand advertisers are going to come in and when the brand advertisers come in and spend a lot of money, I think, boy, I shouldn't even say this, but I don't think they're going to be as worried. They want the word to get out. And they really do. And they did, you know, how do they measure a Geico ad on the television? You know, dial, you know, this 800 number or something. You know, how do they really track, you know, a Walmart ad on television? I don't think that maybe they do, but they're not, you know, it's such a wide swath. I don't know. I don't know if their response mechanisms and how they measure the effectiveness on that is as sophisticated. I hate to say it. The direct response stuff is easy. Did you sell a product? You know, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm kind of looking at TV a little bit for podcasting, because the way that before I came to ads was I spent three and a half years in the TV side at Tribune Broadcasting. And it was a great experience because I got to see how another broadcast medium is sold, and especially from a digital standpoint, how you can, you know, utilize those assets of TV. And the way that TV works is that it's based off of Nielsen, and you get every night you get your ratings, and you find out if that buy that you sold that demand partner, that advertiser, reached enough, you know, GRPs, enough points. And it's very interesting because then if you have not reached enough points that you promised that advertiser, you have to do what's called make goods. And a great example of this is, say, for instance, you're watching a Chicago Bears game and the advertiser bought in a certain amount of points based on past performance of what a Chicago Bears game does. And it ends up being a total landslide, meaning that it's totally not even a close game. People will start leaving around third or fourth quarter. Well, that drives down ratings. So that means that when we get the ratings the next day, that we have to do make goods for that advertiser if possible, based on the declination of ratings. Conversely, if it is a very close game and everybody starts tuning in and the ratings go through the roof, one would think logically, well, then the publisher or the TV station needs to pay more money. They don't.
They don't. So
it's really interesting because that is, if they call it posting. And it's something a couple of over-the-air radio groups have dabbled with, and thank goodness with the PPM coming out, and I don't think it's really, you know, had a lot of traction. That's something that I don't want to. It's almost like a viewable impression that's happening in display. And I'm looking at the TV side for one very large reason is the way that TiVo was bought in ratings. It's called live plus one, plus three, plus seven, depending on how the viewer consumes the TV program. So there are, you know, sliding scales of value, so to speak, on the TV side based on time-shifted listening. And I'm kind of looking at that, you know, I look at that, but I don't want to get too bogged down into the metric side of ad metrics. I mean, ad metrics is definitely a cornerstone of what we do. But I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to how many people are we moving product? Or is the brand actually seeing a lift? How are we actually really working into their attribution of omni media, lots of different media that they go ahead and buy? And I think that's going to continue to grow. I mean, what I get so excited about digital audio and why I'm just so jazzed about, you know, working at AdsWiz and doing, you know, working with a bunch of publishers is that it's not a digital audio renaissance right now. It's an audio renaissance that's going on. Right. We have screens that are so small that nobody is going to want to go ahead and look. I mean, we listen, we put this in our butt pocket, and we go ahead and listen to podcasts, and we listen to digital audio. It is not a display video world anymore. It's an audio world, and it's great because it benefits all of us. I mean, I don't care if you're over the air, I don't care if you're a podcaster or digital audio or linear streamer, all the different flavors of what we do. It's a great time to be in audio, and I'm excited about it because it's the radio transistor of our day. And I'm just so excited that now we have the technology to really do cool, relevant advertising for people and something that's a tune in and not a tune out. I mean, that's really what we need to be doing.
I want to go back to one thing you said, and Rob, if you need to butt in here, just go ahead. But I had, you know, one thing that we saw in trying to do planning was, you know, they buy a quarter. You know, usually, and I typically don't do 1 month deals. I typically do a quarter based upon repetition rate of the podcast and effectiveness of the ad campaign. And doing a month, in my opinion, is flushing money down the toilet oftentimes. So I will do a quarter. And so what I do is I look at, you know, all the shows, I look back in our tools, we have the ability to look at a 3 month running average with basically the highs and the lows. And because, you know, when I'm doing a buy, I'm at risk. The podcaster is going to say, hey, I want to get paid for all my deliveries. And then I have to make sure that I, you know, fall within there. So because if I'm going to promise, let's say I'm going to promise the vendor, 6 million downloads a month, or I shouldn't say downloads, impressions a month. Mm-hmm. If I come in at 5.5, that is not as bad because I just say, hey, they advertised, hey, we missed target. We didn't get 6 million. I'm not going to bill you for the other 500,000, but when I go to 6.5 million, then it's coming out of my pocket because I'm going to have to pay the content creators irregardless. So we really worked on those tools to watch for those variations and actually get alerts when a show went, maybe we had a show go viral on an episode and, you know, we could handle the talking to the media buyer right away. Hey, we had a spike on this show. So, you know, that is kind of the risk that we take as digital folks. Luckily, knock on wood, I keep a track of all the campaigns we do, and I really fell within about a 3 or 4%, I guess for a better word, accuracy rate in delivering what I want. And my goal is to keep it really at under 5%. You know, in other words, I don't want to go 5% under, 5% over. That's where I want to be. And that's hard in this, you get a podcast that all of a sudden's hot. You know, yep. he can really cause a negative impact. But there have been times where a show went crazy and I said, listen, I've got you capped. I have to cap you at this amount because this is what we planned for and you blew it out and I don't have the money to pay you. So, we've done that times or do one episode less in the campaign. So that's, you know, it's just something that's part of the space, but how do you guys handle in the audio space that variance? Or do you even worry about it?
Well, yeah, because I mean, that's what's really interesting about our solution, especially for podcasters, is that once it hits the KPI or the campaign goal, we just stop serving it.
Right.
And, it's essentially if there's a 10 million impression cap on it, as soon as it's that 10 million impression cap, our system automatically stops inserting that ad. So you run into less less managing of that and worrying about it. And that's why I do love the fact that you hit 10 million ads, when there's a stop rate, but there's no ad available because you already hit those KPIs for that campaign, it just rolls right into the content. So it doesn't produce a spot break anymore because there's no more. You already hit all your goals for that podcast content. So that's what I really love about the system. It really keeps the publishers from having to do the manual, you know, and it's tough because if you do have a personal endorsement advertising that is what I call baked in or stitched in, you will run into that type of challenge of, you know, managing that. And it's almost like, well, listen, this is all you're going to get paid. You know, the publisher is going to get paid. You almost have to manage an expectation with them. Even if it does go viral, that it's almost like buying a sponsorship of a show than it is on an impression base or what I used to call the old share a voice type of mentality. So you're almost paying, you know, you're paying the publishers and you're also charging the demand side at that level. Where I think there's a lot to be said about a hybridic type of ad model for podcasts that might be based on impression served, but also acquisition, which is kind of a direct response type of way. So, you know, there's a base of this is how much the impressions are going to cost. And then anything over that, whether it's a booking on travel or it's a conversion into whatever type of metric the direct response client, you know, deems, you know, as a conversion, then that should be a percentage over and above. So I think that we have a couple of ways that I think we can get pretty creative on doing different types of ad models with podcasting.
One thing in I wanted to ask you, though, is we've probably got a lot of podcasters here that are independent. Their shows are, you know, small to large. You know, what type of volume do they have to do to make this financially viable to use a company like AdWits? Because I know you can't quote rates, but, you know, to serve and to inject costs money. And if you're going to do that, you need to have inventory to offset that cost. So what is the guy that's out there is like, man, this sounds cool. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the volume that there need to be at to really make it work?
Well, you know, I think that's where, you know, we try to work with different types of publishing groups. So sometimes we work with aggregates because, I mean, honestly, it's time consuming from an engineering standpoint to turn on what I would call, you know, long tail type of podcasters. Meaning that they might not have enough to do a direct deal with us, but if they're working with a provider that either is a podcast content management system type of provider or a CDN or any other, we do offer, depending on the situation, you know, reseller options for these type of podcasting groups, so they are able to aggregate the long tail. And I think that, so I guess to answer your question, I guess if someone's doing what I would call like a standalone, meaning that it's something that they're going to go ahead and try to attract advertisers. You're absolutely right. I mean, I would say that you're looking at around between a 20 to 30 million impression level where it's going to be something that's going to attract advertisers. So that's by and large getting rid of most of the podcasters out there except for the very large. But I think that if you're able to do an aggregation play underneath another company, And the company is integrated with our technology and they're able to manage those, I think that there's great possibility in that as well. So I think that we can definitely, it's the small podcasters out there, you know, I would say tell whoever you're working with from a CDN standpoint or from, a technology standpoint, you know, to have them contact us. And we love talking to everybody. You know, sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. We do AOD, our AOD solution. We do have client and server side. Abilities. I am a fan of server side because what I love about server side is that no matter where your content is distributed, whether it's, you know, Stitcher, iTunes, or any other type of SoundCloud and those other type of distribution platforms where you might be posting, you're still able to, you know, serve ads dynamically and, you know, gain credit for those. So no longer does the distribution of I'm going to send my podcast out, it's going to cost me more money on bandwidth, but I'm not going to make any money back. Those times are kind of gone. With server-side technology, you're able to monetize everybody in every place. And then with AdWave, we're able to help you out, not in the United States, but also 16 other countries. So it gets exciting.
One thing podcasters should remember, too, if you're self-hosting, it doesn't matter who you're going to work with. You're going to have to put your media on their platform in order for that to be, you know, the path to be made. So if you're, you know, if you're self-hosting your content, and you think, man, I want to get on board on this, and you go talk to, you know, someone that's working with AdWiz, They're going to say, yeah, you're going to have to pay to have your media over here. So, you know, there's that additional thought process. And I'm, Rob, I'm definitely hogging the mic here, but I want to talk about long tail just a little bit. You know, I know the numbers. I know that there's a very small percentage of shows, 4 or 5%, and I'm being generous, that have long tail. In other words, their content's listened to as much next month as it is this month. You know, most shows have this 96-hour burn rate. So are you seeing advertisers, and Rob, you had mentioned it before, that they only want to be in an ad for 2 weeks, but what is the, you know, once it's sitting in someone's, you know, if they're doing offline and where they've downloaded it, and I'm not saying they've taken 2 weeks to listen to it, because usually the stuff that burns in that 96 hours or so is usually time sensitive content. You know, are the advertisers, is that becoming a concern and they've got a specific time frame they want to hit? So do you only put that in streaming, or do you have that ability to set those parameters where, again, that time sensitive advertising only goes in a live stream versus a download? But you can't tell, really.
Yeah, that's a big issue right now, Todd. I think is some of the big brand advertisers come into the space and look at running campaigns that are very targeted towards promotional windows, that they're not going to want those ads sitting on a download file that hasn't been played yet beyond the window. And I think that there is a growing need for different ads to be delivered to a streaming playback versus a download. And I think that need is coming. Rocky, can you talk about that topic at all? I know you guys are, I think you have that capability, right? Am I correct?
But it looks the same. A download looks the same as a stream.
Well, it's same content. It's just different ads.
I know, but how do you tell at the source head when you're doing the injection?
Because one would be from a stream server and the other one would be essentially a file server.
But
so even though it might be the same stream, we're able to create an ad zone that actually differentiates between a downloadable content and a live stream on demand content.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also an HLS stream.
Why don't they just put a date in the creative that this is only good until November 27th? I mean, there's ways around it. You're absolutely right. That is an issue, especially with the retail and pharmaceutical, especially.
Yeah.
That they don't want to have their creative, their non-evergreen creative on a evergreen type of product. And so that is something that we have looked at from this actually differentiating from the type of consumption of a podcast, whether it's download or whether it's going to be a live stream. And because they are two different, they are the same content, but they're two different types of files. One is, like I said, a file server. Basically, you're pulling a download off of a file server. And the other one is coming from either an Icecast, Shoutcast type of stream server. We're able to differentiate between the two, or you can put a parameter in there and we can differentiate from a, you know, a variable parameter as well. So we have a lot of ways that we can target ads. And I think that might end up coming up where we're going to have a copy split, where you have companies who are going to put the evergreen brand message on a downloadable piece, and they're going to put things that are relevant and not evergreen on the stream piece. Because when it's streamed, we have the ability to end date, you know, it's done dynamically real time. So if it's data creative, we just don't serve it. I mean, so that's the biggest difference between the download and the stream side.
On Twitter, there was a tweet asking us, are you going to talk about the new podcasting spec? Is it a media spec or a feed spec? And it's kind of funny because there's really not a new spec, but go ahead, Rock, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
I don't think it's a new spec. I think it's just how we're able to differentiate between the streams. I mean, it's we're able to, if you think of a website and there's different ad zones on a website, whether you have the leaderboard, the side, cube, and the bottom, and we're able to ascertain ad zones and really target ad zones. Or when you look in the ad server, it will say, you know, new media show live, new media show download. And then you're able to target those advertisers based on that type of consumption of media, which is a little bit of a different way than how we've done it in the past. But we are able to split it. I think the question comes are, as the demand side, willing to give us two pieces of creative to go ahead and, you know, and support those two different types of consumption. And also, is it a big enough scale? And I mean, on the download side, absolutely, because that's how most, as you said, 87% of it's downloaded on, you know, podcasts are downloaded. Is that other 13% a big enough scale for them to want to go ahead and split the copy and actually put something that's going to be time-based and relevant?
I'm going to have to ask Angelo, but I think, you know, the concern I have is that from an Apple product, I think I don't think you can tell the difference between a stream and a download. That's the problem.
No, it's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah, so for this to work, all of the client software that exists in the space would have to be changed.
Right.
So there would have to be two links in the RSS feed.
Right.
One to a downloadable version, and Rocky, correct me if I'm wrong here, and then another one that would be for download only. Is there a way of doing that, Rocky, off of one URL where the server would detect the request?
Not right now, but there are ways to do switching. Yes, but it's, I'll tell you, the more that we put in between the listener and the publisher with what I call, I wouldn't say gadgets, but I call light hacks, like either it's DNS routing or anything else that we're trying to do. Yep. I look at it as multiple points of failure that can just happen. I mean, we like to think the streaming, it does never breaks, but we all know it kind of does once in a while. So that's the one thing that I don't like about it, is adding another element of a failure point there.
Well, and also it's getting a whole industry that's been operating for 10 years on a certain model to change all their software. It's going to be all the clients have to add this element for it to be successful. So it's just going to be a fragmented thing.
And I don't think we're ever going to get a client adoption in Apple. So, but it will be interesting to see how some of these aggregation plays that are developing, you know, how you start seeing a lot of, you know, how podcasting is being distributed on the Stitchers and the Deezers and such. And a lot of that consumption is being done on Droids, because it's the major reason why you don't have a lot of Droid adoption or Android adoption, because they're not iTunes users. So I look at it like this huge Android platform, and these people who we're not touching right now that well on podcasting.
Yep.
And wow, that's a hell of an upside that we're looking at for growth for you guys.
And you know, you look at, and we published something earlier in the year, I think Stitcher, they are the majority right now, 3.7% on the Android side. You know, they make up a huge majority of the actual podcast listens, and, you know, the tune-ins and the other folks, they're not even moving the blip at all. So there's a huge upside, but we're still, you know, we could double the audience or triple the audience size overnight if we could figure out how to crack the Android nut. It just, they don't listen at this point. If someone can figure that out.
Well, you know, I think Swell was onto something, but then they got picked up by Apple. So it was like, when I met with Ron, I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. This is exactly, because I've always been, you know, a case cracker, and I've always been an Android user, you know? And so it's not that I'm anti-iOS, it's just I'm more into the Android camp. And let me tell you, you know, Lime and a lot of the RSS readers out there aren't really kind of user-friendly. I mean, you got to know a little bit to, you know, use them. And I think when I saw Swell come out, I was really excited, because I think it really, you know, was trying to, what I liked about it is not only was it a great possible Android play, but it was also a linear play. It allowed to stack content based on vertical of interest. And I think, and you'll see NPR starting to do this, you know, and as well as WNYC with their Discovery app. It's like, okay, is it possible that maybe, you know, podcasting on the Android side hasn't really been successful? Because most of the consumption has always been a linear music feed of some sorts, whether it's a playlist or, you know, something else. It's not a whole lot of high touch. So how do we make podcasts, you know, more of a linear product that's a lean back product that people don't have to finagle and play with that much?
And I
think that's why Pandora has done so well out of the gate for so many years, is my mom just goes to Pandora.com and I'll be damned. It starts playing a stream for her. She doesn't have to do anything. So there's something to be said about the mom user interface, that you have to make sure that it's simple enough that people are going to want to, you know, augment it, but not really overtouch it. I think most people actually appreciate a lean back experience, especially when you're in the car. You don't want to have to be hitting buttons that much.
Yeah. Car is the key thing here. And the whole thing with Swell was, you know, Apple bought those guys because of their technology, and that's their machine learning. So they could compete with a Pandora, and they could have this technology that offers personalization. So that's where all this stuff is going, is context and people consuming this stuff and the technology helping listeners consume the content that they want to consume when they when it's best for them to consume it. And your device would know that based on your schedule, based on your patterns, and that whole machine learning thing is what Swell was all about. And I believe that that's what they picked up. I don't know that Apple really picked up Swell because of the podcasting.
I agree with that. Yeah,
but Apple, I think, I mean, if you look at the Apple podcasting team, the leader of that team is also in charge of streaming radio too.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I mean, it's possible if it becomes a priority in this industry, that streaming is an alternative, is kind of a parallel track with downloading, that Apple could embrace it. It's just a matter, there's no scale at it right now for them, or no spec, or where the industries come together and say, we want this, and going to Apple and saying, you know, this is what the industry wants. Can you bring those technologies together and offer streams in the podcast catalog to content so we can better monetize? And I know that the Apple folks are open to kind of pushing forward successful monetization of podcasts. Not necessarily specifically on their platform, but I know that they are definitely in the mindset of trying to promote the success of podcasting from a monetization perspective, because they see it just like, you know, my experience working at Microsoft was the monetization part of this is the key. If this content can be monetized, then all these platforms can see a reason to more to support it more and add more capabilities and those kind of things. And at some point, maybe Apple jumps into the fray and has some sort of a monetization piece in here. And but that time will tell on that.
One thing that Daniel was saying in the chat room, he says, actually, Apple does see a difference between streaming and downloading, at least for site manager users. Well, the problem is there's a small number of site manager users.
Separate.
Yeah, it's a separate thing. There's you know, I don't know. I would guess probably less than 100 in the space. But you know, and to do that, you have to have a significant network that has a number of shows, and but that data is not be able to be extrapolated, and it's still pretty limited, in my opinion, in the information that they actually give.
Let me ask you guys, I mean, how do people find podcasts organically?
Oh, I think it's word of mouth.
Yeah,
and
it's all sharing. It's all sharing and word of mouth, and a lot of news coverage here of late.
Yes.
I had to laugh yesterday, and maybe this is a good pivot point. I read the Ad Age article that came out yesterday, and it was just, you know, I'm like, no, there is measurement's not an issue. Demographics is not an issue. They keep raising points in these articles. I'm like, no, we have figured this out. Why are you saying this? And it drives me, be frank, batshit crazy, because it's like, who are you talking to people that are actually doing this?
No, they're not.
You know, come on. And there was a person in that interview yesterday that you raised some points. I'm like, huh, what do you mean you haven't figured that out? That's elementary. It's so elementary. It's not even funny.
I think the issue, there was this, I think, physician kind of, I don't know if I even would have mentioned that in that article, quite frankly, because I'm all about, you know, let's talk about the positive of what we have today. Yeah, exactly. But I think that there's not really a consensus on metrics. I mean, but is that something that I really want to be flashing out in an Ad Age piece? No, because I really don't think it's necessary. I mean, the consensus we have on metrics is more, you know, like logistics, like, you know, are we going to call it, you know, a full download or a play or a listen?
Right.
It's more of the fine tuning of cohesion, I think, right, at this point, than it is saying that, well, there's no great way to measure podcasting. I'm like, no, there's fabulous ways. We have server logs. We have lots of ways we can measure podcasting right now. Yeah. I would say that, is there an overarching Nielsen type of MRC accredited type of metrics? No, but we do have a pretty solid idea, since most of these podcasts are served off of file servers. We have a lot more insight than I think that article shared, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible the amount of, you know, I look at the data that I pour through on a weekly basis, and I think if we could just take the reporters and say, look at this, I think they would be, oh. And I'm glad they're happy that they're talking about the space. Don't get me wrong.
You don't want to smack them too much, because you do enjoy it. I mean, it's nice to be put in the spotlight, because I think, not to be like the Howard Stern mentality, but sometimes any PR is good PR,
That's
know?
Right.
So you kind of have to look at it like that.
Yep.
But I always wonder, like, there's other, like, whenever I look in, you know, an organic search for a podcast or a content, I always wonder why, you know, we haven't gotten, you know, got to the point of, you know, speech to text for organic search, why we're not using more closed captioning type of functionality to increase, you know, people to find podcasts in a way that is different. Because, I mean, that's something that I think was, you know, tough on the video side as well. And they started, you know, realizing the power of closed captioning and XML feeds. So I always wonder, you know, is that a possibility down the road? So I think that right now to find podcasts, it's a little tough. I mean, you got to go to iTunes. You got to, you know, there's some recommendation search engine ability in all the you know, platforms. And I think, you know, I would like to know more about, if I'm listening, you know, if I'm listening to, you know, Freakonomics, what other type of programs would I possibly like? Give me suggestions. I don't know.
Yeah. One, look, can we talk a little bit about the IAB? You know, I'll say this just publicly. Rob Voice joined the IAB last week, and we're going to be sitting in on the podcasting committee. Is there anything you can say? In Rocky, I know you're heavily involved in that. Is there anything you can say about that? Or
yeah, absolutely. There's lots to say. So Sarah Ben Mosley over at WNYC, me and her started talking, and she's on Ads with Technology with all of her podcasts. And we start saying to ourselves, is there a need to carve out podcasting from the digital audio committee? And more we started thinking about it, and just as how special podcast is, I mean special in a happy way, not special in a short bus way. Basically, you know, is there a reason to? And the more we start talking to folks like you, Todd, and everybody else, we said, yeah, there is. It is a carve out of digital audio, but it's a very important carve out. It is handled differently from a technology standpoint. How it's consumed is different. And so we started, you know, we approached IAB over the summer and said, listen, we'd like to go ahead and see if we can get support for this. And I think even possibly the IAB was surprised on how quickly the support came, because I've been a linear broadcaster for a while, you know, internet radio gal, but, you know, I know podcasting, you know, well enough. I have never been a full-blown podcaster. But it's interesting, because I would say the podcasters are even more passionate than the digital audio guys, you know, the linear folks, which I didn't think was possible. But I mean, we're all geeks here. Let's all be honest. We all are audio geeks. And I would say that I also sit on the Digital Audio Buyers Guide Committee, and it's a lot of kind of folks like me who are, you know, kind of, you know, salesy and geeky and business development and everything. But the podcasters, we formed at about the same time, and everybody's on it. I mean, what we're putting together right now is really a white paper to the industry about podcasting today and helping the industry define it and understand it better. And sometimes when you have those collaborative committees, you know, there's usually only one or two people who are doing a lot of the work. And it's been so exciting to see on the podcasting side that everybody is just really jumping in. And what's even more exciting is almost everybody's a competitor. I mean, it's like, it really is. It's really bizarre. And I would say that even on the digital audio side, I mean, we all collaborate. I mean, even with the DAS side, I mean, it was Abacast. I mean, we're all competitors in this space, but we all realize that we need to have standardization for all of us to do, to do what we want to do in the space moving forward. And what's been really fun on the podcasting side is to see all of these people who, by and large, are pretty much competitors saying, yeah, I'm more than happy, you know, to offer, you know, my stats, or, you know, to make it an aggregate so we can give a good impression to the demand side or anyone who's reading this, so they really truly understand about podcasting, which is really cool. I have to tell you guys, it's and we have such a great group of folks on there. I mean, both of you guys are on there, and then we also have a lot of non-commercial guys, which, as you know, is by and large a lot of podcasters. So we have the non-com guys. We also have vendors like us. We also have people who are doing a little bit of interesting things like Zap Media, who are trying to, you know, increase engagement with advertising, and even demand, you know, ad large and demand side. So like I said, it's a nice hodgepodge of people, which I think you really need on those committees, so you're able to bring in different elements of it. We haven't got to the metric side very not deep down. We've all talked about it. That one could be an interesting conversation. I know on the metric side for the digital audio, there is a pretty big division between over the air and digital audio and MRC accreditation, where they've been very lively discussions, as we like to say. So I don't know if that's going to really happen on podcasting. I think that everybody in podcasting realizes that we need to have some semblance of metrics. Kind of like a TLH that we have in linear. You know, we have a couple of very core, you know, metrics that we talk about, you know, active sessions, TLH, those type of, you know, metrics, I think, that you're going to start seeing form in podcasts. And I think that's what the IAB, and what's nice about the IAB is they tend to be a very neutral party. And once we are able to mediate and establish these type of standards, then they're able to be our talking piece to the demand side and our standards, and, you know, to understand really our strength within the space. And it's the validation that we need.
One thing to consider too is, just so that everyone understands this, the IEB, whatever comes out of the IEB, will be, you know, like say the white paper. If we get to the point where there's a metrics document, it's informational, and it doesn't necessarily written in stone, because the big three media buyers, MRC, some of those other folks, they are going to look at this, and then they're going to probably provide feedback at some point. Now, how long is this going to take? This stuff can take a long time. I think the white paper you guys are going to, it's probably going to get turned around relatively quickly. Now, I don't even want to put a timeline on that, but the metric stuff, what did the streaming committee take? 2 years to actually come out with a spec? It was 80 pages or something like that. So
yeah, I saw it. It was a thick document.
So this isn't something that is done overnight. And at the same time, what I like about this is, when we tried this before with the ADM 5 or 6 years ago, there was a lot of agendas. And with a group like this, with the IAB, essentially, I guess for a better word, moderating the personalities, is that a correct way to say that?
It's a much bigger and more stable entity, right? I mean,
yeah.
the Association of Downloadable Media was like formed from all the parties involved,
right.
And there was no bigger leadership.
Right. Where the IAB is a, you know, a well-known, respected organization. So I think what we'll find is that the agendas, even though everyone has an agenda, I think what we'll find is, in the end, there'll probably be a very good consensus document. And
I think the agenda of everybody is to really add structure to some extent around podcasting. And if anything else, it's trying to get a similar, you know, verbiage, which, as you guys know, is crazy. I mean, even on the, you know, is it ad stitching? Is it ad injection? Is it ad insertion? Is it ad replacement? I mean, heck, there's four of them. That's just off the top of my head.
Right.
And I've even tried, because, you know, it seems like they were, and it's hard for me because right now it's ad stitching. And I'm trying to, because that's how they use it in video. So I'm trying to get used to saying stitching, and it's something that doesn't come natural still to me. So I'm working on it, but I think it's good that we're trying to have the same type of vernacular when we're talking to people, Because the last thing you want to do is confuse people. I mean, I think there's some people out there who purposely confuse people so they feel like they're more intelligent or, right, you know, whatever. I'm all about, hell, this is a hell of a confusing space. I don't want to confuse anything more. I want to make it, you know, simple. You know, tell you, you know, my first 10 years going to the demand side from 98 to 08, talking about digital audio, the deer blinks. Do you know about digital audio? Blink. Blank, and I'm just going, oh no, this is not and, you know, and then you're strapping, you're trying to grab for stuff. And I'd probably say in late 08, finally, when I started asking about internet radio, digital audio, or 18 different flavors of how you want to go and put it, they finally said, oh, you mean Pandora? I said, sure. Whatever the hell you want to call it. I'm just glad you understand what the heck's coming out of my mouth now. So, I mean, that is exciting, you know, and I would say that Pandora did a great job of evangelizing and doing great missionary work in the demand space in New York, especially with Doug Stern out there. He's a great guy. And he did I think all of us has benefited from what they're doing. And now what you're seeing is other evangelistic. I think what you've noticed in digital audio, especially, is that, you know, people, you know, defected from over-the-air broadcasting because they knew that digital could do something that would be a little bit different than what they're doing on over-the-air, you know, whether it was, you know, very niche, very focused content, something that they could actually address that they went anywhere. So we're kind of a weird bunch of folks to begin with. There's a lot of competition, but there's not a whole lot of mudslinging, at least, not for me at least, because at the end of the day, hell, I worked with half of these people. And we've all had such great careers in this industry, you know, and been through the highs and the lows. And, you know, I'm always nervous when there's a CRB coming up, you know, because we're coming into royalties on the music side. In the past, it's always caused the industry to slow down a little bit. And I'm really, really hoping that this CRB does not have that same effect. I mean, you can almost look at my LinkedIn to see, you know, when the jobs start going away, when CRB gets in session. So I'm hoping that that's not going to happen this time.
For those of you that don't know, CRB is Copyright Review Board.
Good times. Woo.
Yeah. And that is
acronym city. Here we go. Yeah.
That's for the folks that are the Pandoras of the world, that sends shivers down their spines.
It's because it actually defines their possible profitability moving forward. And it's a hell of a thing to be held to. So, but that's a whole other conversation. You know, I always call that the downer, like whenever you go to rain and stuff. And I love, you know, Oxenfurs. I'm not taking anything away from David. But whenever, you know, you see that panel, everyone's just kind of like, all right, let's go to the bar and start drinking. What the hell are we doing? You know, because anyone in their right mind would not be in this space if they saw, like, so I guess we have very tenacious people who are in this space. And I think that tenaciousness just like bleeds over into IEB where people are like, listen, but let's go and put our agendas away. Okay, we all have agendas. We all know it. But at the end of the day, we all have a similar agenda, which is evangelizing this space, making it easier for the demand side to get here, making it easier for listeners to understand and consume, and really creating great product. And I think when you go into a committee with that type of overarching feeling, you get a lot done. And so I think that you're going to start seeing it. I would say that IB for the past couple of years was a little bit slow on digital audio. It was just kind of in a lull. And I think what you're seeing is a new vibrance happening right now. So I'm just glad to be in there and have a place to talk. You know,
I also have go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that this new podcasting group at the IEB, what kind of transparency do you see that group having to the overall industry? Is there going to be any process or any way that the broader industry can kind of keep up with what's happening on this group? And because I think that's a big element of what happened with the Association of Downloadable Media was a lot of stuff happened behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of people that felt really, really kind of alienated. And it is a very different medium. It's not populated by a lot of big players, I think, than what's been the case in radio or TV. It's very much a distributed group, as you know, Rocky. And there's thousands of content providers. And for everybody to feel like they're all on the same page here, I think, and kind of seeing what the progress is. Is there have you been thinking about that at all, or is that not even...
A little bit, you know, I'm like, okay, great. We have these great white pages and everything else that we have, you know, created. And that's why I, I agree. And the IAB is not exactly, you know, cheap to, I mean, it's not outrageously expensive, but it would be inhibitive for a lot of smaller publishers. So how do you make sure that their voice is somewhat being, you know, heard in that type of committee? And then also, when we have a consensus, how do we distribute that type of content? I mean, for the first, on the first point, it's a lot of us, you know, I say me, you, Rob, we talk to a lot of different people in our space. And so I constantly try to build as much consensus that I'm least seen, and making sure that, you know, I'm trying to keep an unbiased attitude of, you know, the space. So I think that we have enough people in this, in the committee, that reach into, you know, what I call some of the smaller publishers, whether it's through their own company or through their day-to-day, that we should be able to, you know, bubble up consensus, even though they're not part of the actual IAB member committee. But as far as distribution, that's another committee. So we were like, it feels like we're going committee crazy, but there's another committee that's just for events, for specifically for demand side and buyers. And we want to start having more of those type of events in New York City, where we invite buyers in to really get a download of digital audio, and podcasting will be a part of that. And by carving out podcasting from digital audio, we'll be able to have a voice that will not be overshadowed by a lot of the linear, or even I would say, simulated linear, because everyone forgets that Pandora is essentially an on-demand product. Everyone thinks it's a broadcast product, but it really is an on-demand product.
Yeah,
and, you know, sure. So the linear, yeah. So to speak.
One thing I think, though, we need to come back, and I agree with Rob. Here's the caution. If podcasters feel they have been slighted and the commercial interests are trying to dictate, they will brutalize this process when it's public.
Oh, gosh.
We've
seen it before, Todd.
We have seen this before. So
pitchforks and fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's a very vocal community when you piss them off. I mean, we've seen them take down companies before.
Right.
I mean, that's
great.
How
fabulous. What did I get myself into?
Well, you have not thousands, tens of thousands of independent creators who, not all of them are in it for the money. Let's be straight up. But if they feel the space is being threatened and trying to be dictated to,
we look how we did DAST. I think it's a really good process. So with the DAST one, when you're absolutely right, it is a 80-page PDF craziness. But what I loved about what the IAB did is they put that out for public before it became official. It was put out for public consumption and comments. And I think that's something that needs to happen when we release, when we're about to release, at least have a couple of weeks where we put it out to, you know, I would say the inner community as much as possible to get comments on it. And I think, like I said, it's, of course, anybody can have a voice in IAB, but that voice comes, obviously, with a little bit of cost and subscription and membership to the IAB. Like I said, that's prohibitive for a lot of small companies. So I think you're right. I think how do we grab consensus from the smaller guys and, you know, not let them feel disenfranchised?
Yeah.
Well, I can throw out a couple of ideas. I mean, these don't have to be done, but if it's possible, maybe record the group calls and put those out potentially as a downloadable file somehow, so, you know, podcasters can go in and listen to what the discussions are and kind of keep up with it. Maybe I don't know if there's some way to input on that or comments or something like that can live below something like that, or maybe even putting out on a website the current status of any kind of white paper that's being pulled together or something. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a way that a lot of players can at least keep up with this. Maybe they can't join the IAB, but at least they can see what progress is happening in the direction that group is going.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. The only thing I thought about the recording too, Rob, because I was on your, and I started thinking, I'm like, well, our because we do flesh out some of our biggest sores there. If you know what I'm saying, guys?
Oh, I know. Yeah, there's definite risk having too much transparency here. But, you know, we have to balance that with the need of this community, because we've seen this community implode before on these issues. So, anyway.
And, you know, I think from...
You guys can be part of that because you speak so much to this and SAP people reply to you saying, listen, this is a big pain point for me. Is this being addressed right now on the IUB? You know, because you guys, between you two and, you know, in Lipson as well, you guys touch a lot of podcasters. It's like, you know, and really making sure, and that's why I think it's, you know, also over at PodTrack where you guys have there's a lot of you guys who work with a lot of these smaller publishers. And how can we get, you know, maybe it's, you know, making them feel like they're part of that through your companies and making sure that we're really addressing them. But yeah, it is a challenge because you want to have a community consensus. But at the same time, I don't want to, like the serial adage thing, don't really want us highlighting things that are maybe a little bit of an issue, but really we don't want to make them a bigger issue because we know and with us that they're manageable, but when they're put into a PR and they're spent a couple ways, sometimes it can be devastating.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that there's definitely a lot of risk in doing this kind of thing. Anyway, it's just something to think about and for us to consider, and you know, the people listening to this know that we are concerned about those issues.
You know, and another thing too is, you know, I hate to say it, but I was in a prior life involved in some software design stuff where I was working with a group that was trying to come up with a GUI for a product, and the least number of people got the most done, because when you got over about 10, it really got, the process got ugly because everyone had an opinion. I think if the, you know, Rob, and I hate to say it, and podcasters are not that trusting. So I hate to say it, I hope the podcasters can trust, but I don't know. It's tough. I'm going to have to think about ways that we can work with our community. I guess the question then would be, Rocky, I don't know, what are the rules? What are the committee rules? You know, you got this document that you don't necessarily want everyone to look at and get on the street and start being comment before it's published. How do you mitigate that from a, I guess you don't, you just have to maybe talk about points within the document with your...
You just have to hope, and that's why I'm very positive about the podcast. You have to hope you have a variety of constituents on there that will address a lot of different needs.
Yeah.
And that's what I do like where we're sitting right now is that, I mean, everyone should have essentially 10 different points of agenda because literally there's that many different types of podcasters on there, from the vendor side to the CDN side to the publishing side. So that's what your hope is when you form these committees, that you have enough, because honestly, we want opposing.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we all sit there and agree, then what the hell? We should all be writing papers already.
That's right. Like, that's right.
Well, you want the challenging points.
And Rocky, one of the glaring holes, I think, in that committee that I think will, you know, once I say it, I think will open your mind to it is the big radio groups. I didn't see anybody on that committee that was CBS from the broadcast side.
Yes, but CBS is also on there.
Oh, that's right. One.
I mean, but you're right. I mean, is there? You're right. Is there a huge, like? Is there I won't put Stitcher in like a big radio group, but you're talking about an over-the-air broadcaster that might be repurposing for podcasting.
Yeah.
CBS is the only one that's on there right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And for just so the audience knows too, and it's right on their website, the baseline membership at IAB is the starting point, depending on your revenue, is $7,000 a year. And it just gives you an idea, the entry level point to get into the IAB. So that's just, you know, for the folks that haven't went over the website and already looked. We've heard about the process. We want to be involved. We wanted to have our, you know, put our two cents worth in and hopefully I'm excited. Again, I'm still waiting for some access, but I haven't seen the document yet. So I'm sure that, I'll spend several hours going through and writing some notes over it. But I think the process is going to be good.
Podcasting stuff and start adding it to the digital buyer's guide too, because that's what's great about how you kind of chunk these out, is that there needs to be an element about podcasting and the digital audio buyer's guide. And then it's great because we're kind of fleshing out that subsect right now, which is great.
You know, one thing I think that, and I was going to bring this up earlier, I think one of the things that's helping us in the space right now is when podcasting started in 2004, 2005, the media buyers that we were talking to them, that were doing the tours and going to New York and going to Chicago and Dallas and LA and San Francisco, was those media folks, if they're still in the space, were the little groups of 20 that we would meet and talk to. They were the ones that were doing the buys, control of the accounts. Now those folks are 32, 33, 34, 35, and they have been in the space that number of years. They're starting to take some management level positions. So what we've got too is we've got a group of folks in the actual media buyer space that have grown up plugged in, and
10 years.
And so guess what? You can't teach an old dog new tricks, but some of the old guard is starting to retire and move off. So as that happens, the digital media space wins. Because
also wins, I think people are certain, even the legacy folks, that's what I'll call the legacy. The people who've been in this industry for a while, I'll put myself in that kick too now. But I mean, but the legacy folks are starting to look at their own consumption. I don't care if they're, 55, 60. I mean, a lot of them communicate with their kids, via texting. But it's really a smartphone phenomenon. I mean, and they're looking at how they're listening, whether it's on the subway or whether it's, in their car and the connected cars that they're getting. So it's in their face. I mean, and I think that what's really amazing about this space is that we have such a spread of buying happening in the space versus consumption. And a lot of people look at this gap that we have as something that's really, oh my gosh, it's horrible. And I'm like, I look at it as nothing but growth, baby. I just like, because that this is going to somehow have an epiphany, like, okay, this is stupid. There's this much consumption and we're only buying this.
Right.
I mean, it's what happened with mobile banner. I mean, it's the same thing. You're going to see that's going to start closing the gap. And it's, how do we make it easy for the demand side to buy a highly fractionalized marketplace? That is a huge challenge. And that's, that's what we live with every day at AdsWiz. It's like, how do we make it something that's very complex easy? And it's not easy. I mean, there's a reason why we only have essentially two competitors in this space. Building an ad server for digital audio, everything's different. Inventory forecasting is different. It's a linear product. It's try doing inventory forecasting for a downloadable product because you guys have such spikes all the time. And you're trying to forecast how much impressions you have on a podcast. And then something gets picked up viral. It's like having an earthquake at the LA Times on because the website traffic goes out through the roof. So it's those type of challenges that, we live with every day, but it's all in the mission is to make it easier to connect the two better, because right now it's still very hard.
And another thing that's kind of interesting is I talked to an individual this week and he said, yeah, we only do sell advertising in the shows that have 50,000 downloads. He said, it's not worth our time per episode. It was not worth our time to sell advertising into other shows. And I'm like, that's, you've got probably less than 100 shows that do over 50,000 downloads an episode. That's to be quite frank. And I'm not talking about the ESPNs of the world and those folks. I'm talking about just, our independent content creators. So, I'm thinking, I'm kind of laughing internally because I'm like, I've got 25,000 shows that do from dirt to 1.5 or 2.5 million per episode. So I'm thinking there's a lot of stuff in between, and there's a huge, huge, once the spigot gets turned on, we're going to have so much advertising, we're not going to be able to know what to do with. And it's inventory is going to be sold out and people are going to be creating new shows just to get more inventory. We're close to that spigot being turned on. But I think the key is, Rocky, and you and I are on the same page on this. We get this defined. We get everyone talking the same lingo. And if everyone can bite their tongues and keep their agendas at the door and everyone talking the same thing to the media buyers, it's going to become much easier to sell the space.
Oh yeah. It's frequency and reach, with evangelism.
Yeah. Well, Todd, and also,
it's a message too. Yeah, it is.
your long tail comment, I mean, it's always been kind of a thought that that was unduplicated audience typically, because people have different
right.
desires and content. And if you're buying across 1,000 shows, you're reaching a huge number of listeners, right?
Right.
And it's not necessarily duplicated audience. I mean, right. it's unique people. And trying to do that across a lot of shows is technologically possible. It's not easy. I know you built some tools to actually do it.
It's easy.
Yeah, well, that's because you built tools to enable it.
Right. Now that was our business, was all yeah. sizes, any comer, large or small.
So I think it is an opportunity that Todd, you're kind of at the forefront of taking advantage of, because most groups, most networks don't think at that scale. They think of, you know, like Podcast One, they think of 200 shows. They don't think of 10,000 shows.
Yeah, and I've done buys where I've had 400 shows at a time on a campaign, you know, and
yeah.
doing and reporting and sending the reporting off to the media buyer every Monday with no issues.
And I think that's the opportunity in this space. And these ad buyers are thinking, you know, about big hit shows,
right?
Which is great, but that's a limited audience there.
And the dirty little secret is the smaller shows have a better ROI.
Because yeah. they're more passionate. Yeah.
And they're yeah. more connected.
Yeah, they're more connected. Yeah, I hear you. They're the P1s that will do anything to support that publisher with that advertiser.
That's right.
Correct. Correct. And like I said, that's an unduplicated audience typically. I mean, if you're in, I believe that's where the opportunity in this space is in the future. And it's not always in the big shows.
And I will tell you, though, the one thing that I'm being very careful on how we position to the demand side guys is we get a lot of what I call talk, news talk, no play dictate, meaning that because of the Rush Limbaughs of the world, that a lot of advertisers do not want to be around anything that's news talk. And so I'm just curious if you guys have ever run into that kind of, is this podcast considered controversial? Do I want my brand around it? I mean, have you guys dealt with that? Have you had any type of, you know, have you had to mediate that at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been exposed to that particular situation. I mean, there are certain genres of podcast content that brand advertisers wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole,
yeah.
you know? It's just the reality of it. And that's been in other media as well. As you think about, you know, cable television, and you think about how much more open those channels are to, you know, sexually explicit content and topics that are at the cutting edge of culture. And a lot of brands will stay away from that, and podcasts fits right into that. You know, there are brands that are willing to live in that world, that have a product that caters to that market. But there's an awful lot of brands that don't. And that is a reality that we have to all be sensitive to in this space.
Probably 90% of my deals, I even eliminate shows that have are cussing in their shows. If they're swearing, four-letter words, they definitely are on the bottom of the consideration list. Now, there are a few...
Your show's not going to get bought today then, Todd.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we're not selling this show. So anyway, the yeah.
it's true. Clean it up, Todd.
So the exception to that is gaming shows. It seems to be that the media buyers aren't so worried about the, you know, them guys cussing during these on-screen gameplays. After all, they're blowing people up anyway in these, you know, one person or two person shooters or whatever they're called.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Yeah.
So, and then the comedy shows, you know, that's another whole, boy, you know, that's a challenge, because they, you know, all they have to say is, you know, the N word or something, and they're done, you know? So, I do set some guidelines.
There's advertisers who do like that too. So yeah. that's what
yeah. I just tell there them. Are.
Because yeah. we get hit all the time. They're like, well, we can't, you know, you can't, we have to block all the news talk stations that we work with for AdWave because of Rush and Sean Hannity and all the rest of the stuff. And my response to those demand partners are like, well, how come you're not going after the ones who do advertise on there? Because I would think that even be, you know, like the gold standards and all those, there's a couple of them that definitely do for direct response. I'm like, there's lots of advertisers that are okay with that too. Can we find those, please? Because yeah. I think there's a space for both of them.
And it's funny. It's funny. Some of those advertisers stay away from Rush and Hannity because they have a diehard fan base. Or, you know, they're essentially, I don't know what the metric is, but probably 50% of the country it would be buying their product if they were in those ads. But,
exactly. It is crazy. But, you know, but that's the beautiful thing about it. Everyone has their own opinion, which is fine. But that's interesting. I think that's what I think with blind networks, I think that's a little, because AdWave is a blind network, is we have to very much manage the publishers on there. And, it's tough. It's, you find new ones every day.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's a little bit of a generational thing, too. I think that the coming up generation is a little bit more open to these controversial shows, and thus the brands will probably adapt to that. And it just feels like that's the direction things are going. But yet, on the other hand, I feel this kind of trend towards culture getting more conservative, too. So I'm not quite sure. I think that there's kind of a faction there that's going on. But I hope it opens up a little bit more and these brands are less sensitive to that kind of stuff, because I think they're missing good ROI opportunities by being in a lot of these shows.
You know, and we have a large contingent of LGBT shows on Blueberry, and those audiences are extremely loyal. Yet, you know, good luck finding an advertiser that's going to advertise in them. It blows me away that, you know, they don't want to support that community. But, you know, it's the times we live in. Companies are so,
about fractionalizing their brand into a bad place. But what people don't understand is that we have transactional memories nowadays when it comes to brands. You're only as good as my last brown Santa who dropped off your product.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting. It's because being a marketer at heart, I look at this and I mean, we have very transactional brains nowadays. I hate to say it, but people don't remember anymore.
It's true. For breakfast yesterday?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm calling the kettle black myself. Yeah, I mean, I'm not much better on this, but with the, with the LGBT stuff, there's also brands like Volvo and Subaru and other, like Coors Light. I mean, there were some of my largest advertisers in the Denver market because they had money carved out for Hispanic, and they called it alternative advertising back then. You know, and they have money earmarked. You just got to find that earmarked money and just grab it. But you're right, it's a harder sell. Definitely is.
And you know, when you look at the foreign market, you look at Brazil. Brazil's got this incredible, incredible podcasting community. It's huge. The numbers they're delivering down there would make some of the shows, matter of fact, make some of the biggest shows in the United States, like, you know, they're just a little show. I mean, they have some massive shows down there. Same thing with Germany. Germany has some shows. There's not as many, but they're bigger. You know, they're a lot bigger. But
well, and the shows that are coming out of the UK through BBC are huge shows too. I mean, oftentimes here in the US, we don't talk about the BBC, but BBC is probably the biggest podcaster in the world.
I'd agree with you. Yes, it is. Yeah. Huge. But you know what's crazy about the Latin America market? It's not really a great radio market. Hmm. I mean, my point is, it's a great publisher market.
Right.
Like, people create great stuff. But, you know, as we moved in there into Latin America, it's very interesting because everything from how they do licensing, like for their football, it's very different than how we do it in the States.
Right.
And it's also, when you're looking at a market share for brand, you know, for media buys, it's not as much, radio doesn't take as much of a share. So, you know, when you're going into a space, you have to wonder, okay, do I want to go after the radio budgets or do I want to go after the digital budgets for digital audio? You know, we still live in that kind of hybridic, you know, side. And I'm hoping that its sheer volume is going to make up for possibly the small amount of dollars that you might be seeing in those marketplaces from a radio standpoint. So it's an exciting time, guys.
We're at 90 minutes, Rob. We're actually at 97 minutes.
How did that happen?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't go 2 hours with Rocky.
Wow.
I'm just getting started. My team.
I know, exactly. That's what I mean. So Rocky, before we kind of wrap up here, I just wanted to mention one thing. I mean, what are you seeing? I mean, you're coming from this kind of more from kind of the streaming linear side. How do you see these worlds converging, you know, on each other, and how many players do you see new companies jumping into supporting on-demand audio and podcasting? I mean, I'm seeing it as kind of a little bit of a revolution in the convergence of linear and podcasting coming together with technologies, kind of like your company. But are there a lot of other companies you think that are moving this direction?
Yes, I think that you're going to see more over-the-air broadcasters who are going to start dabbling more into podcasts. So, but what's interesting is by and large, what we've been seeing in that space is a repurposing of a morning show. So yeah. It's time shifting content that already exists, which is kind of similar to what we're doing right now. So it's nothing wrong with it. It's just, and the reason is that if they time shift it and they put it onto a on-demand or a looped stream, they garnish and the panel picks it up via PPM. They get more over-the-air broadcasting and ratings if they're in a simulcast, total line reporting type of market. So I think that's definitely pushing it. But I also think that they, by and large, you have a lot of large broadcasting groups that have really good talent in some very major markets, and they want to go ahead and distribute that a la carte into different types of platforms. But I think you're going to see that as well. I think also you're going to start seeing more TV to audio via CNN or sports, whether it's college sports. TuneIn is doing a lot of that, where you're taking content that's, you know, for one type of medium and making it an audio-fied type of product, whether it's on demand or also stacked in a linear type of listening type of behavior. I also think that the Android killer app has yet to be created. I mean, I played around with a lot of them. Yeah. I mean, I use Stitcher. All of them are just missing that thing. I don't know how to describe it. You know, it's not making me a convert yet. And I think that there is a huge opportunity in the space for the Android market as well. And then I also think that podcasters are going to start seeing that you're going to see networks start to form that might be, you know, publishing networks that provide tools for podcasters start to really stack a lot of their content into verticals. And whether it's sports, whether it's lifestyle, self-help, you know, put it into more categorical type of verticals and start putting them into a linear fashion. And I know that it's kind of tough because a lot of people look at that as, well, that's no longer podcasting. And so it's tough. I mean, if you think of podcasting as a form of delivery, it's, you know, that's, but really the content generation doesn't really matter how it's consumed. And I think that people have to come to grips that they're not just podcasters anymore. They're content creators, and your content can be distributed in multiple ways and not to get too pigeonholed on one type of distribution system.
And that's why we built Roku channels and everything else, because I agree completely. You know,
and I think we start seeing more of that. I think that's where it's going to start moving towards. It's, and I'll tell you what's driving that. A lot of it that's being driven is, even though the connected car is not here, everybody thinks in the back of their mind with their product, when from a UI standpoint or UX, you know, how are they going to make this content easily accessible? Literally push button. I mean, I don't think we have quite gotten there on a lot of the car interfaces. I've been in a lot of them. I've played around with them. And it still is not as easy as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 push buttons in the front of an AM, FM stereo. It's getting there. But how do you organize the content, audio content of the universe into a head unit? I mean, it's something that I worked at IM Networks back in 98, where obviously we were just 16 years ahead of our time. But, you know, how do we create a tuning service that's going to be safe, accessible? Is it going to be voice? You know, how do we basically track interaction that doesn't involve a finger click? And that's why I like the stuff that Zap Media is doing. I like seeing these companies that are coming out trying to not follow the rules of display. I mean, we don't have to follow any rules. We shouldn't.
I mean, well, and that's what
Come on.
That's what Swell was trying to solve.
And that's why I was so sad when it got built up by Apple, because that means Droid people like me are like, whoa.
But that means that Apple, who's the 400-pound gorilla in this space, is going to have that kind of technology that you're asking for. So
what One thing that I think too is what we're seeing is I have playlists. You know, I use our MyCast system. And by the way, if you're going to want to build a vertical, talk to me. We got a product for that. But the MyCast situation where I just pick the shows I want to do, it puts it into a playlist, and I can put that in any device that's capable of playing a podcast. I think that's what people are going to do in the cars. You know, they're going to because, you know, I don't want to be honest with you, me personally, I don't want to be served something. I want to pick what I'm going to listen to. I want to pick what I'm going to feed my brain. That's what's different. That's what people need to understand is different about this space. People actively choose to listen to me or you. And
Todd, it needs to be a blend. And this is what I was trying to tell Swell before they got acquired by Apple was they need to build. See, they were moving down this track of telling people what they should be listening to.
Right.
Based on what their interests are and what their social graph looks like. But I really encourage them to go down the path. It's great to do that as a suggestion engine and as a, like an automation lean back experience. But you got to add in the ability for people to select the shows that they love and put priority on those.
I'm surprised it hasn't been done. Well, actually, NPR does seem like that kind of.
Yeah.
Where you can say, I want, you know, all things considered, you know, I want all of these. And then it's a playlist generator. Then it feeds the latest, you know, podcast in there. And so it's almost like you create, kind of places for them. And I think there's people who are getting near it. But I think you're right. I think you kind of, but I also want to have suggestions. So I kind of want to, I want a little bit of swell. But I want control. I want it all. That's what I want.
That's right. That's exactly, that's the key. That's a good place to end the show at right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all want it all.
All right. So Rocky, where can they reach you? What's a good contact?
Rocky at AdsWiz. That's R-O-C-K-I-E at AdsWiz.com. And more than happy to talk to anybody. And I appreciate your time on the show. It's been really fun, guys.
So again, it's ads.com is the website. And of course,
it sounds much cooler if you have a French accent.
Okay. Ads. I'm not even going to try.
Don't even. But we're mostly a foreign company. When all the foreigners say it, it sounds much better than
Ads Wiz.
Better at it. It's kind of like real enemy too. That's another one you have to kind of like work on getting out of your mouth. So it comes naturally the more you practice it.
Very
so,
cool.
Yes, Rocket Ads Wiz, come on and see us. Like, yeah, love to talk to anybody.
And
hey, so Rocky, are you going to the New Media Expo at the National Association of Broadcasters event in April?
Yes, the big show, baby.
Yeah. All right.
It's going to be good.
Maybe I'll have my voice for more than 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard for anyone to go to a 4-day show and keep their voice the whole time.
I start sounding like, you know, the senior lady in Miami who's been smoking 8 packs of cigarettes a day. So I hopefully I'll keep my show. Just so you guys know, because you guys are both voice people, if you want a voice hack, you start losing your voice, you can take ibuprofen and you'll have a voice for 4 hours, but it'll go away then.
Oh, that's interesting.
It reduces swelling of vocal folds. So just so you know.
Yeah, also if you swallow some honey, it'll help too, which is what I've done before.
Well, whiskey helps too there, Rob.
Whiskey. You know.
So I guess we'll start carrying a flask of whiskey with us at NAB so that when we're talking
some
to
honey
people
and some
taking a shot.
There you go. Ibuprofen. It seems like the perfect trinity. Do we need anything more? Come on.
That's funny. All right. It's Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. If you have comments about today and want to suggest a guest, we're always up for that. And Robert, are we off for the Thanksgiving weekend or we got someone for next Saturday?
I don't think we've even talked about it yet, but I don't have a guest at this point, but I will find one if we're going to do a show.
Okay. I guess I'll leave that up to you. Well, we'll talk after we get offline. But also my solar is going on December 6th. I'm thinking we're going to be able to do a show. I don't think they'll make me shut the power off until a little later. So I think we'll be able to get one out before they,
let's plan on doing it. It's going to be after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah. Sounds good. So we'll plan on one and then, keep our fingers crossed. I just tell the guys they can't pull the thing out of the wall until we're done with the show after this morning. But hey, everyone, thanks for being here. Rocky, thanks for coming out. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend and have a happy Thanksgiving as well.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you, Rocky.
To the rest of the audience, we'll see you next time. Thanks for being here at the New Media Show at newmediashow.com. Everyone take care and aloha.
Bye.